Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show podcast with Drew Malcolm, the Prince of Twitter, the Regent of RedState.com, and the I don't know what you, what would you call it, the MC of the shutdown collapse? I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to call this thing.
I mean, call you. You're the host here. I'm just a helper.
Well, let me tell you something. I knew how this was going to end. I knew how this was going to end when it started. It was just a question of when it got there. And Democrats got nothing out of this thing because they didn't have any leverage. They had absolutely nothing out of this. And you know who could have warned them about that? Andrew Malcolm?
No.
Chuck Schumer. He told them the same thing in March. They wanted him to do this in March, right? The progressives were all over him. Oh, let's do a shutdown. He's going, no, you can't win one. When you've got your opponent in the White House, you can't win a shutdown. And they got really furious with him when he cut a deal with the Republicans to keep the government running in March. So this time around, Chuck Schumer, you know, he's obviously looking at the elections and, you know, the last week, decided that he was going to do a shutdown because that's what progressives wanted. The donor base was all up in arms because he didn't fight. Who wasn't fighting? Fight.
I think he was also looking at next year's election and the possibility of him being primaried successful.
Oh, no, he's not up next year. He's up in 2028. But he is, I think he is concerned about that, but it won't be next year. Yeah. And I'm actually surprised it lasted as long as it did, but I'm not surprised that it collapsed, because at a certain point, when you're screwing up air traffic, you're taking money from away from poor people, and you're making federal workers work for free.
including the military.
At a certain point, you look at that and go, you know, maybe this is not the smartest way in the world to go about things. You know, it's got nothing, Andrew. They got absolutely nothing.
Let's not die on this hill. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They did. They did die on that hill. And now, predictably, everybody's angry with Chuck Schumer again for not holding the caucus together. And I think that they suspect, and I think you and I probably suspect the same thing, that Schumer just decided that he'd had enough of it too, but he got 8 of his colleagues to get up there and tried to take the blame, right? Dick Durbin.
Yeah.
Number two guy, right?
Yeah, it's a setup. It's a total setup. And if you look at them, Durbin is leaving. Fetterman, he doesn't care. There was somebody else in the group that is leaving.
Well, there was Angus King. Angus King, Fetterman, and Cortez Masto had been voting to end the filibuster all along. But excuse me, I'm popping open my celebratory Canada Dry Fruit Splash Zero Sugar edition here. But I mean, they've been voting all along to end the filibuster, but 5 more of them had to flip over yesterday. And Gene Shaheen did. Dick Durbin did. I want to talk about Dick Durbin doing this. He's the number two guy in the Senate. Do you think Dick Durbin flipped without getting the okay from Chuck Schumer?
Oh, no. Nobody flipped without the okay. And I'm sure that within the caucus, they passed the word, ease up on the ones that I told can vote. We want to all end this thing now and get it over with.
Yeah, because there was nothing left. I mean, you can make the argument that it might have helped in the elections on Tuesday by firing up the progressive base, right? Getting them engaged and all that kind of stuff. After that, there's nothing to win. They weren't going to get what they were demanding from the Republicans. Anyway, let's remember what they were demanding. They wanted a reversal of the rescission package. That was, I think, the least of the asks. They wanted a reversal of the Medicaid changes in the One Big Beautiful Bill, and they wanted an extension of the ACA subsidies on their terms before they would vote to reopen government. They got exactly zero. Zero of those.
Yeah. And Republicans didn't take the blame for ending the filibuster. The Democrats will do it next time they're in. But
yeah, I mean, were you surprised at how outraged, though, that Democrats were on the record after this? Because I think they could have still sold this as some sort of a win. But I mean, Bernie Sanders kind of threw that potential out the window on the Senate floor last night when they were recording this on Monday. And I was surprised. I thought that if you were going to do that, they would have a plan to unfold this as at least some sort of rhetorical win. You know, well, we stood up, we made our point clear, and now the American people can understand what the midterms are about. And that's not at all the messaging coming, not even from Schumer's allies. I mean, the eight people who caved aren't even making that argument. I mean, this thing is inept. The whole thing is inept.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. They are inept. They are. I suspect a lot of it has to do with Trump inhabiting their head all these years, and especially since he came back. But they haven't handled the defeat last November. They haven't faced up to their role in it, in the weekend at Bernie's for 4 years. They haven't accepted it. And you'd think that after such a spanking last November that they would reorganize and change. But the left apparently has such a grip on them that they can't do that at the moment. They're going to have to, if not for 26, for 28. I mean, they just...
Well, you kind of think, right?
They have to. They have to if they want to win. Now, I suppose this could be kamikaze. We'll go down in flames. But even when the Republicans in 64 got so shellacked by Lyndon Johnson and Barry Goldwater, who was, 16 years before his time advocating conservatism.
Yeah, really, truly. Yeah, you're right.
That was 64. So by 66, the Republicans had bounced back and won pretty good wins in the midterms. And then in 68, the Republicans began winning five of the next six presidential elections. So these losses in leap years shouldn't be that lasting. But it appears now that it is that way. Now, you have to think that Democrats will come around, but the lefties are not caving, and they're not, and the others are not calling them out on it. So,
yeah, you know, I
good
have
on
to
them
say,
for us.
And I do have to say this too, though, is that I don't know how dire the situation is going to be for Democrats. I think I'd like to get your thoughts on this, actually. I don't know that people are really going to remember all this, you know. I'd like to think that everybody's going to retain the lessons of this, and that, you know, people will be, you know, embarrassed by the outcome of this, and they should be. But I, electorally speaking, I don't know how much impact this is going to have, other than to just make Democrats look stupid and foolish, right?
Yeah. No, I think you're absolutely right. They look inept. Unfortunately, the polls before the agreement to end the shutdown showed that everybody was blaming the Republicans. I don't know how you come to that, except you believe the broadcast media. The Media Research Center did a really thorough study. They watched every network newscast for the month of October, and it was overwhelmingly negative as if the Republicans were responsible for the shutdown. And only a handful of slight criticism of Democrats. So people who walk through the living room while the news is on got the impression that it's all Republicans' fault. Now, Donald Trump is a world-class messenger. This is what I wrote about in the column yesterday or Sunday. He's a world-class messenger, but he can't message everything. And Republicans have to step up and learn the game. Republican senators are clueless about messaging. They could have saved themselves a lot of damage and ongoing pain. So I think you're absolutely right. Blame for the shutdown, but embedded, I think, in an awful lot, too many people's minds, is that, well, that's a Republican's fault. And even though that's false, it'll endure, I'm afraid.
Yeah. I guess now you take a look at this, though. I mean, let's talk about one other aspect of this we haven't really talked about, which is the media coverage of this, which, again, I think is a little surprising. I mean, I'm looking at the media coverage of this today, and it's actually pretty good. I mean, they're treating it like what it is, an embarrassment for the Democrats. I mean, maybe it's just undeniable, but yeah. I don't see a lot of people who are saying, oh, no, this was really a win. You don't see a whole lot of this. This was actually a win for Democrats. There's a little bit of it out there. Oh, well, you know, this was a wake-up call for the administration. Or, yeah, this just showed that, you know, the cruelty of Donald Trump. You know, I've seen a couple of comments like that, but not even really so much from people who would be inclined to do this. I didn't see this today because this is a show that I never miss an opportunity to miss, but I imagine The View probably had.
Yeah. I don't, I haven't been able to find it, Ed. I just don't know where it is.
Well, it's on ABC, you know, and
no, that's okay. I didn't ask you. I said I was unable to find it. Yeah, shut up. They are.
I almost did a real spit take with that. Shut up, Andrew.
Ed, you ignorant slut.
There you go.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. Looking overall at the coverage, now that the end is nigh, they're being, well, I guess they have to be honest about it, but that doesn't negate an entire month's coverage of, boy, these Republicans are causing this, and people are going to do without their food stamps, which is a ripoff. 42 million people on temporary nutritional assistance. Give me a break. I don't think one day's honesty is going to erase the damage of a month. And Republican senators, you know, senators in general, all of them, they still think they're in the world's greatest deliberative body, which is horse shit. But they believe that, you know, they believe they got a nice tie on. So it's fake, but that's how they live. And so we don't really need to explain ourselves to the public. They'll get it because we're so right. And Trump said to Bret Baier, you know, Republicans have to get on the program here and they have to get out and sell themselves every day, over and over. I used to tell my governor when I worked for him, I said, you know, about the ninth time you're tired of saying this, the first person in the audience will go, really? And they'll be getting it, finally. It's not that Americans are dumb. They're just inattentive. And you have to say it over and over. Trump knows that. You're fired. How many times did he say that? He knows it, and he's really good at it. I mean, think about there was a pause. This is what I, another thing I wrote about in the column. He's made a big deal out of crushing the drug cartels, or at least preventing them from getting so much drugs easily into the country with the blowing up boats and vaporizing these guys. And then bringing in an aircraft carrier group. Well, that message got through, and a Gallup poll just the other day found that the numbers are in the column, but something like after a record low of optimism about combating illegal drugs of 24% just 2 years ago, now the number is a majority, 52 or 53% say that, oh, we're really feeling good about it. And that's because Trump is driving home the message, and Hegseth, and everybody's driving, look what we're doing to these guys. And you have to do that. You have to do it. And Republican senators, Democrats too, but I don't care about them, Republican senators are clueless. And I think, well, we're doing right, so everyone will realize it. Not so much. And it's not going to take more than a few losses in either House or both of them next year before the conservative agenda and Donald Trump's legislative agenda will be paralyzed for the last 2 years of his last term.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm not necessarily sure that that's true. I think he's a little bit more flexible in the use of executive power than maybe previous lame duck presidents been. But I mean, I think that, you know, I will say this. After the election, you heard this talk, right? The elections this past week, right? After Tuesday, you heard people starting to say, oh, this is a start of Donald Trump's lame duck presidency.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it lasted 5 days.
Yeah, yeah. No, because he's a comet, you know, he's a generational comet, or even a millennial comet. You don't see political personalities like Trump hardly ever. And he's here now, he's in the sky and flying high and doing what he thinks is right. And I'm enjoying every second of it. I don't agree with him on everything, but by golly, the majority of what he does and wants, I'm all for. I just worry about what comes after this. There is no one with the personal power of Trump. You know, some of it will spill over on Rubio or Vance or whomever, but it won't be Trump. I mean, And they won't want him on stage all the time. He may want to be on stage all the time, but they won't want it. They want to be their own president. And that's understandable.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I agree. I want to get to your column, though. At least one of your two columns. You wrote the Thursday audio one. Do you realize the billions going to millions in federal food subsidies?
Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge amount of money that goes into SNAP, right? Right. And it's like one out of every 8 Americans is on SNAP now. I mean, it's
stunning. It's is everybody sitting down? It's $2 billion a week going to food subsidies in what was supposed to be a supplemental. We'll help them out. And a temporary supplemental help them out. And it's not. People get on it and live on it. And you just have to go to Twitter and you'll see women with their own pictures bragging about how many kids they have and how it jacks up the SNAP money they can get, and they don't have to deal with a husband. And I mean, there's a lot of fraud there. But 42 million need help all the time? Anyway, it's become, in effect, another welfare program, like the one that we got rid of back in the 90s. Remember, for all those generations, workfare. All those generations, they said, well, welfare isn't really working, so maybe more of it will. Well, no. Yeah, not more of it will. And then finally, when Bill Clinton got spanked in the midterms in 94, he came around, and the Republican Revolution with Newt Gingrich, they finally got welfare reform. But now SNAP is the next one, and it's being abused the same way. It's sad. It's very expensive. It's your money and mine going at $2 billion a week. I didn't figure that out by the hour, but it's a lot of dough going out the window. And when you see what they're able to buy at grocery stores, if you're behind them in line, I'm not sure that the candy bars qualify as supplemental food assistance.
Well, they do, unfortunately. So does too. And do you remember, I mean, this came up, I think it was during the, it was over the summer when they were discussing, it may have been during the rescission debate, but they were talking about trying to limit SNAP benefits, and they were going to cut sodas out of it. And Coca-Cola and Pepsi started really laying on the lobbying. It's like, wait a minute. So a lot of products.
They have a right to rot their teeth. Let them buy it.
Yeah. There's a lot of money on the line when it comes to SNAP benefits, and it shows, well, right? Yeah,
it's right. And this is the institutional inertia that comes with these programs. There's 100 federal poverty programs. 100 of them. SNAP is just one, and it's $2 billion a week. They all get in, they develop their own political constituency, not just the people who get it, sure, they want to keep going, but the people who don't get it, who benefit from the spending in it, they want to keep it too. But that's your money and mine. And,
I gotta contradict you here. That's your money, not my money. My money is going My money is going to people at Health and Human Services that like to sue nuns for not providing birth control to their employees. That's where my money is going. Your money is going to.
Okay, Edward, you got it. I'll give you that.
Okay.
It's the same thing happens in education. You know, somebody says, well, what happens if the teacher all wore green hats? People would pay more attention. And so all the teachers put on green hats, and it turns out in a decade that somebody studies it and says, well, no, green hats don't have any effect on learning. But the green hats stay because the people who make green hats, they love it. And it's the way these programs work. They develop their own constituencies that keep them perpetuated and going and going and going. And there's no one has the... I won't say it, but no one has the will to do anything about it, except Trump sometimes. And I'm not sure that SNAP is going to get reformed, but I wish it would.
Yeah, I don't think that SNAP's going to get reformed. I don't think that the ACA subsidies are going to get reformed either, and they should be. Because this gets back to one of the key issues, right? Was that Democrats wanted to just slam through an extension, a long-term extension to the pandemic subsidies. These were subsidies to Obamacare that were put in place for that pandemic to try to encourage more people to sign up for health insurance in the middle of the pandemic. And a lot of us warned at the time that, you know, subsidies that are emergency subsidies, and I use this term in quotations, emergency subsidies, rapidly turn into permanent subsidies. And we are seeing that right now. It's sort of like the tax cut thing. It's the reverse of the tax cuts, right? You had the Trump tax cuts that, because of reconciliation rules, had to have a sunset date on them, right? But if the sunset date goes by and you don't extend the taxes, it looks like a tax increase, right? And so they were kind of forced to make them permanent, because Democrats didn't want to be seen as being hit by a tax increase. Actually, the Democrats sort of kicked the can down the road, and Trump made them permanent when he came back into office. The same thing's true with these subsidies. It's gonna feel a lot like a tax increase, right? So the idea that the one thing that Democrats are saying, well, at least we got a vote on the ACA subsidies. There was always going to be a vote on the ACA subsidies. Republicans are motivated to do something with this too, because they don't want to get hit with this thing and make it look like a tax increase. They've made that clear. Donald Trump's talked about it. They just didn't want to be forced into accepting a full-on extension. They want to negotiate this to try to get the numbers back under control. And the same thing's going to have to happen with SNAP eventually, but you know, it's a midterm cycle. It's always a midterm cycle. I don't know when you're going to, I don't know when fiscal sanity is going to be able to, I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine on that.
My cynicism has taken control. I'm sorry. It's never going to. Remember Obamacare, that was going to be to make healthcare affordable, except we have to help you buy it soon. You can keep your doctor, you can keep your insurance. Obama promised that 37 times you can keep your doctor and your private insurance if you want.
One thing that this debate settled is that Obamacare is not affordable. The Affordable Care Act is not affordable. It keeps having to be restructured it's not affordable.
Exactly. But he doesn't care because he got it in. That's what happens when you give one party too much control. Remember Nancy Pelosi? We have to pass it so you can read it. Now, the good news is that after that happened, and after their, what was it, $787 billion economic stimulus bill at the same time that didn't stimulate anything. After they happened, Democrats suffered an historic, worse since the 1930s, midterm setback. They lost 63 House seats and a whole bunch of governorships, and 1,000 local Democrats in 2010 were unelected. Now you say, well, okay, but they can get them back. They've gotten some back, but they didn't get them back in time to rig the 2010 census reapportionment. Yep. And that has been ruling until 2020, and the same situation occurred. The Republicans rule in that area, all because Obama's ignorance or arrogance, and Nancy Pelosi back then over Obamacare and the stimulus. They assigned a stimulus member to be implemented by Joe Biden. That was going to be thousands of new jobs, thousands of new shovel-ready jobs. That got to be a joke. Even Obama made fun of shovel-ready jobs when he was in office. It was such a joke. And the new jobs didn't come until Trump came in and eliminated the regulations that were stopping everything. My cynicism is showing.
My cynicism is always showing too. So we're so good at doing these things together is that we match each other's cynical energy, but.
I'll cynicism you up one. No, I'll match you and raise you one cynicism. Yeah.
So it's a bad game of liar's poker. It's cynics poker. Cynics poker. All right. We should probably wrap things up, but I do want to also point out that you have a newer piece that went up, and you wrote it before the before Democrats caved on the shutdown. So Donald Trump is the message maestro, but those GOP senators are duds. I'm just curious, did the resolution of the shutdown change your mind a little bit on that, or is it?
No, it didn't. In fact, it was published before they caved.
Right.
No, it didn't. It's the same thing. And the point of that was, I think the headline has something to do with Trump was the messenger maestro, and Senate Republicans are duds. Well, that's true, still true, even though they may have won this time. You won politically, but you didn't win in the minds, because only Trump was selling. It's the Democrats' fault. The Republicans complain. But, I mean, last Friday, Democrats voted en masse to not pay the military volunteers, men and women. Yeah. Now, did you hear a drumbeat of that? Anything announcing that, protesting it? No.
No.
It didn't. No, there was no drumbeat. I mean, that's a priceless gift to Republican senators. They could have gone out and go, are you kidding me? These people have been working around the clock on guard duty for the national security without pay, and you guys just voted it down? No, nobody was driving that home. Boom, boom, boom. They should have been driving it home every hour, every time anyone was on TV or on Twitter or anywhere. But no, they didn't. They just let it pass. Democrats got off. Well, see, if they do that, if they don't sharpen up, too many of them will be unemployed this time next year, and we'll lose Congress.
Yeah, I do not disagree with this at all. But we'll see. We'll see.
You better not. You better not, Morrissey, or I'll filibuster you.
Well, that leads us right into the jokes of the week.
Yeah, that is a joke. I got nothing.
Okay, I got a couple for you then. I got a couple for you because I'm always here for backup, and so is jokesoftheday.net, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So I've got a couple from there that I think you're going to enjoy. So this little girl's out walking with their grandmother when they come across a couple of dogs mating on the sidewalk, right? And the little girl says, what are they doing, Grandma? The grandmother's kind of embarrassed. She goes, well, the dog on top has hurt his paw, and the one underneath is carrying him to the doctor. And the little girl looks up at her and says, they're just like people, aren't they, Grandma? And she says, what do you mean? She says, you offer someone a helping hand and they turn around and screw you.
Okay. But I'm bummed.
Yeah. All right. So this one's a little bit different kind of a joke. This guy goes to a doctor and says, doctor, you say my girlfriend's pregnant. And he goes, yeah, that was the test result. He says, but I don't get this. We always use protection and the condom has never broken. So how is this possible? And doctor says, well, let me tell you a story. There was once a hunter, and the hunter always carried a gun with him wherever he went. One day, though, he took his umbrella instead of his gun and he went out hunting. A lion suddenly jumped in front of him. In order to scare the lion, the hunter used the umbrella like a gun and shot the lion, and it fell over and died. And the guy looks at the doctor. He says, well, that can't be right. Somebody else must have shot the lion. And the doctor says, exactly.
Okay. You know, when you were telling that joke, I was thinking about Indiana Jones' dad, Sean Connery, scaring the birds to crash the German plane. And
with the umbrella. No, that's true. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Yeah. I love that movie. Yeah. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. That was the best of the three. Oh, well, it was the best of the five. The last two I don't really acknowledge. But was the best. They should have just left it at that. But okay. All right. Well, you know what we're never going to at is our weekly podcast with Andrew Malcolm, except for next week because Andrew's off.
Yeah,
we'll be back in 2 weeks. Next week,
but we'll be back, and that's right. And I'll see you then, and I'll see everybody there. Thank you, guys.
All right, we'll see you then.